I'd like to welcome you here this morning, and just to recap a little bit on last week, because today's story really does follow on. And for those of you who weren't here last week, it'll be good just to set the context by telling you what we looked at last week, and also reminding others what we covered there as well. And if you remember, what we looked at was the fig tree that the Lord cursed. And we saw that the cursing of the fig tree was really about the Lord coming to his church, looking for what can satisfy his desire, which is the desire for our salvation. And what he needed to find on that tree was fruit. Because it is the fruit in our lives that satisfies the Lord. And when that fruit is not there in our lives, so he has nothing in us into which he can flow. So our lives wither and die spiritually. And so that's what we were looking at. And then he went into the temple, and we remember there that he cleared the money changers' tables, turned them over. And that represented the Lord getting into those areas of our lives where there is mixed motives. And what he does is he tries to turn, or he turns the table of our thought, so that those motives that are based in self can be released, or we can be released from those and enter into purer motivation in terms of our spiritual life. And the Pharisees had a problem with this. We know this because when they asked Jesus the question as to by what authority did he do these things. And Jesus came back at them with a question about the baptism of John. Who was it from? Was it of God or was it of men? And then we saw that the Pharisees began to reason amongst themselves. And they said, they knew that if they said it was from God, that they would have to accept what the Lord was saying. And if they said it was from men, then if they said that it wasn't from men, or from men, sorry, if they said it was from men, then they would have the problem of having to deal with the people. Because the people viewed the baptism as being from God. So it was that they couldn't answer the Lord. They said they didn't know. And so that leads into this story today, which is the story of the parable of the building of the vineyard. And the meaning of the word parable is to cast alongside. It's what it literally means in the Greek. And the parable is designed to be cast alongside our thinking, our current way of thinking. And the parable is designed to ground within us aspects of our motivations and to call or challenge our thinking. So a parable is not just a story. It is a story in which every detail contains spiritual truth. And it's important that we remember that when we come to the Lord's Word. And the object of the parable is to get an emotional response. It is cast alongside our thinking so that we might be able to view the quality of our thought and affections. And what we will see is that when Jesus cast this parable alongside the thinking of the scribes and the Pharisees and the authorities of the day, they were convicted and they knew what it meant in relation to their own lives. But because their heart was hard, they rejected the teller of this parable, and they went out and they sought to destroy him. So we're going to look at this today, and we're going to look at how it applies to our own lives. In order for truth to be planted within our mind, there needs to be good ground. And the good ground is a willingness to seek the Lord in his word, and to work from our understanding of it, to apply it to life. If we would do that, then we create a situation or a state of life into which the Lord can implant His truth. So our reading from the Word today is from the 12th chapter of Mark, reading verses 1 through to 12. Then He began to speak to them in parables. A man planted a vineyard and set a hedge around it, dug a place for the wine vat, and built a tower, and he leased it to the vine dressers and went into a far country. Now at vintage time he sent a servant to the vine dressers that he might receive some of the fruit of the vineyard from the vine dressers. And they took him and beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he again sent them another servant, and at him they threw stones, wounded him in the head, and sent him away shamefully treated. And again he sent another, and they killed him, and many others, beating some and killing some. Therefore, still having one son, his beloved, he also sent him to them last, saying, "They will respect my son." But those vine dressers said among themselves, "This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they took him and killed him, and cast him out of the vineyard. Therefore, what will the owner of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the vine dressers, and give the vineyard to others. Have you not even read this scripture? The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. And they sought to lay hands on him, but feared the multitude, for they knew he had spoken the parable against them. So they left him and went away. Just reading from the Heavenly Doctrines, two readings, one from the Apocalypse Explained, paragraph 315, and the Arcana Celestia, paragraph 6470. By the vineyard which the man planted is signified the church in which is in truths. By the servants whom he sent thrice is meant the word given to them through Moses and the prophets. Thrice is mentioned because three signifies what is full and complete, that they beat them, wounded, and sent them away empty from the vineyard, signifies that they falsified and perverted the truths that are there. To send them away empty from the vineyard signifies that they deprived the word of its goods and truths. By the beloved Son is meant the Lord as to divine truth, who is also thence called the Word. That they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him signifies not only that they killed him, but also all divine truth which is from him. The truth that all life comes from the Lord I have also been allowed to know from the consideration that no spirit's thought or speech originates in himself but comes from others, and that these others derive theirs from others again, and so on. This truth has been often demonstrated to those who believe that life was intrinsic, but something which flowed in. From this demonstration of it, they were led to conclude that since nobody's thought or speech begins in himself, but comes from others, everyone's comes ultimately from a single source, that is, from the Lord. And unless everyone's had come from a single source, it would have been quite impossible to introduce order into the lives of those in heaven. Such order does, however, exist there, involving clear-cut divisions into communities on the basis of their good. The situation would be altogether different if everyone's action sprang from life that was his own. So it is that we have this parable that the Lord told, directed at the Pharisees. And in general terms, what we have is a story that contains the idea of the mistreatment of something that is entrusted to others. And this mistreatment leads to the killing or severing and rejection of a right relationship to the owner of the vineyard. And it also leads to a wrong relationship in terms of those who were given charge of the vineyard's relationship to that which they were given charge over. And this in turn brings about the destruction of the vine dressers. So what we have captured within this simple parable is a powerful message concerning the fundamental spiritual principles of life related to the human condition. So that the Pharisees represent self-interest primarily. And it is this self-interest in us that seeks to possess that which is not really its own. And that is the general principle being illustrated in this story. And truth, we saw last week, is given that we might be able to reflect upon our thinking processes and our affections in order that we might be able to identify this operation of self-interest in our motivations. And it's so vital that we learn to reflect upon what passes through us. Because if we don't, we will never ever see the need for change. The thing about the Pharisees is that they thought they were good, that they didn't need to make any changes. They relied on their understanding of the word, tailored to their own ambition and want of power over others. And so because of that, they were blinded and were unable to receive truth as it came to them in the form of the Lord Jesus Christ. You see, if we will not reflect on our thinking and our affections, the quality and determine the quality of them, we will resist the Lord's attempts to enter more fully into our lives. It is a spiritual law. So what of the story? Well, clearly the Lord is the planter and owner of this vineyard. And so what is it that this vineyard represents for us? Well, the vineyard corresponds to the essential aspect of life that we are placed within. It represents the place where we are put in order to live and work. So the idea of the vineyard captures for us the purpose and meaning of life. And we need only think about the use of a vineyard to come to see why it is we are here. For the purpose of the vineyard is to produce fruit, which in turn is used to produce wine. Now, when you think about wine, its largest ingredient is water. And water, we know, cleanses. And that which cleanses our mind is truth. Truth is the means by which we can cleanse our motivations. But wine is of a very different quality to water. And wine is used in celebration. And so it is a symbol of spiritual truth, which is able to be shared amongst others. And so the joy of the spiritual life is captured in the idea of wine, or the truth that wine is a correspondent of. So wine corresponds to the goodness of life. The goodness we are able to share with others that we receive from the Lord as a result of practicing, reflecting, and turning away from, and through seeking the Lord's assistance, from those things in our nature that seek to shut Him out, to shut out His love. We are given a responsibility. So we are the vine dressers. And the responsibility, of course, is to cultivate and tend the vines. And in order to do that spiritually, we need to look to cultivate a sense of a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. That is what spiritual truth needs to lead to. It needs to lead to a concern for the welfare, the spiritual welfare of others. And this is what loving the neighbor is all about. It is about a life centered on others as opposed to a life centered on self. And so it is we are charged with cultivating this spiritual life within our own lives. And we see that the owner of the vineyard is described as being away, distant. And of course, in terms of our own lives, the Lord does at times appear distant, far from us, yet He is ever present with us. It is but an appearance that the Lord is distant. And that appearance is necessary in order that we be left in freedom to choose our life. Spiritual life centered on others, or a natural life centered on self. This choice is left to us. And yet, the Lord, in building the vineyard, hedging it about, building the tower, creating the vat, demonstrates that He has left to us everything that is needed in order to pursue the spiritual life and have that love cultivated within us. And He does that through giving us a gift. And that gift is a sense that the life we have is our own. But it is only an appearance, as we saw from the reading today from the Arcana Celestia. That life is our own is an appearance. The truth is that the Lord and the Lord alone is the source of life. And we need to hold that foremost in our minds, because the appearance is very strong that we possess our own life. And this is the problem of the vine dressers. They began to believe the appearance. That was that over which they were given charge was their own. But of course it wasn't their own. It was the owner of the vineyards. And we see how that thinking or that believing of the appearance can draw out the true nature of the self in terms of their response to these servants that were sent by the owner of the vineyard. You see, the appearance is so strong, it is easy for us to forget. And so it is that the Lord sends servants. Servants of His love, goodness, and mercy, in order to remind us of the truth that He is the sole source of life, that He is the sole source of what is good and true. So these servants are the insights and the truths we gain from the Word that teach us this fact. Their purpose is to remind us that the Lord needs to be at the center of our lives, that His Word needs to be the foundation upon which we operate from. And that our life is not our own, and that we cannot do with it as we please. So these servants are truths from the Word. And it is only as we take those truths and reflect upon our own internal states, and then act upon the knowledge we gain, that the Lord is able to enter into our lives and receive that fruit that the vineyard of our life produces. But if we will not reflect, if we will not try to put these truths into life, then truth becomes an enemy. It becomes something that wants to take away what we are attached to in terms of our own selfish state. And so we have a progression, for there are three servants that are sent. And the first servant, we read that they took that servant and they beat him and sent him away empty. Now the word for beating in the Greek is to flay. The word is also used to mean to skin something. And so it is with the Pharisees. We saw that they were into the outward appearance. They would be considered, or would have considered themselves, moral. Now, moral truth contains spiritual truth, but moral truth is not spiritual truth. It can become spiritual, but it can only become spiritual in our lives as we're willing to reflect on our inner states. Otherwise, it is merely external. It is an external morality. And generally, those who are firmly fixed in an external morality are very critical of others whom they do not think matches up to their external standards of life. And so it is that these vine dressers are willing to take what is external, because it can suit their own purposes. Living a moral life is useful in getting ahead, because society demands a certain level of morality. But that getting ahead is very much grounded in self, in ambition, and in the qualities that are associated with our selfishness. It is not until we lift our vision and begin to apply those things to our inner life that that morality can actually be transformed into something spiritual. And so this servant is described as being skinned. And like the Pharisees, they can take the externals of the word and use it to their own advantage. But they send them away empty, or in the Greek, it is commissioned empty. And so the emptiness of that morality is that it contains nothing spiritual. They're happy to have what is external, but when the Lord challenges their motivations, they resist him. And this is seen clearly in the second servant who comes. And what they do to this servant is that they stone him, and the servant is wounded in the head. Now, stones correspond to foundational truths, but in this context, it corresponds to what is false, false reasoning that is directed against this servant, directed against those truths that are trying to elicit from us a recognition of the Lord and his ownership of our life. But false reasonings are brought against that truth. And that is the next stage in this slippery slope down away from the source of life. And so this truth is attacked with stones, and the head is wounded. Now the word for head is principle. And what it's talking about here is the chief principle of spiritual life is wounded. And what is the chief principle of spiritual life? or a religious life. It is charity. It is love. It is a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. The vine dresser seeks to cast stones, cast criticisms, cast judgments. And this wounds that principle within us. If we engage in that sort of behavior, we are wounded. The life that the Lord is trying to cultivate in us is wounded. And so that one also goes away empty. And then the progression leads to the coming of a third servant. Three is what is complete. And so this highlights the completion of the process. And what happens to this servant is that the servant is killed. And so there is something that dies within. The capacity to receive spiritual life. And it is a tragic, tragic situation. Goodness cannot be received into the life at any level. Self-interest has become entrenched as the principle of life at this point. And so then we read that others are sent and are either beaten or killed. So the Lord shows that He is tireless in coming to us in forms which we are able to grasp if we would but turn and seek His life as the center and source of our own life. But if these things are rejected, what then? And so it is that we come to the final one sent, which is the Son Himself, the Son of the owner of the vineyard Himself. The living embodiment of divine truth at a level that can be grasped by a mind steeped in natural things. And so it was that the Lord Himself entered into the world, clothed Himself in a form which we could see, touch, hear, came to us at a level that our senses could grasp Him. If there was but something in us that would seek Him. And so He comes also to us today in His Word, in stories like this one, trying to illustrate the principles of spiritual life, that we might have an emotional response, a response which says, yes, I need to make His Word the center of my life. And in this story is contained a warning. If we would not do that, then we cut ourselves off from love. And if we cut ourselves off from love, we cut ourselves off from life itself. And this is what is illustrated in the treatment of the son, for we read that the vine dressers reasoned amongst themselves, and think about the insanity of this reasoning. They reasoned that if they killed the son, the inheritance would be theirs. Yet there was still the owner of the vineyard. And this is the insanity that can capture us all, where we think that life is our own, to do with as we will. It leads to us destroying everything good around us. And so the Lord again, in sending His own Son, and sending divine truth at a level we can grasp, seeks to enter our lives and seeks to have us move from that basis which will bring the joy of the heavenly life into the reality of our day-to-day lives, that others around us might be touched. The interesting thing about the reasonings of these vine dressers, that in the Greek it says they spoke toward themselves. So their orientation is toward self. And when the orientation is toward self, true perspective is lost. And so it is they decide that they will kill the heir. They will destroy the last hope for redemption. They will destroy divine truth itself by falsifying it to suit their own selfish ends and ambition. Thus, they will not recognize the Lord. And so we read of what will happen when the owner of the vineyard comes. Of course, the Pharisees who were listening to this knew full well what they would do if they were the owners of the vineyard. And so the Lord couches his language in a way that will convict their hearts, hoping that they would turn and recognize the divine truth of which he was the embodiment. But they chose to immerse themselves in false principles, to hold to their ambition and to rule over those around them. And so it is that they shut life out and they are destroyed because of it. It is not the Lord who destroys. The Lord will destroy no one. He cannot destroy. The Lord is love and wisdom itself. Destruction comes about because of our unwillingness to receive him into our lives. And that is what is illustrated here. So we have been given life. We have been given a sense that that life is our own. It is the Lord's gift to us. And the purpose of meaning of life is found in tending the vineyard, in cultivating within ourselves a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others, that we might bring forth fruit, and in handing that fruit to the servant whom the owner sends, we make the acknowledgement, as in presenting the offertory, we make the acknowledgement that it is all from the Lord himself. So while life may appear to be our own, we must constantly remind ourselves that the vineyard is not ours to do with as we please. It has been entrusted to us. It belongs to another. So let us be ever mindful of that fact and acknowledge this so that we don't fall into the trap illustrated in this parable of thinking that we know best and that that which we have around us is ours to possess. The word is given that we might know the truth, and through knowing this truth, enter into the potential of our life, the potential that the Lord has created in each and every one of us, that we might experience the richness of the life that the Lord offers, that those with whom we're in contact with may benefit also. Amen.